Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Dr. Laura story when we come back. Well, the Civil Rights Act of 1868 was enacted by Congress to be the citizen's policeman against police and government abuse. Randy Weaver was paid over $1 million for the wrongful deaths of his wife and son. Right now, the police in Los Angeles are bracing for hundreds of civil rights lawsuits in its latest round of Rodney King-style police misconduct. And you know, we hear a lot through radio, TV, and the press when these sensational government-citizen confrontations are being acted out. But then we hear little or nothing about the government paying for these abuses under the Civil Rights Act, called Title 42, Section 1983. So what would you do if you were victimized by the FBI or the IRS or some other governmental agency that takes your property or arrests you or jails you or beats you? Well, there has to be a remedy for every wrong, and there are more than 14 million of these civil rights crimes that are committed by the police and government officials at every level of government every single year. 14 million of those kinds of crimes every year. So whether you've been a victim or you think you may be a victim of government wrongdoing at some time in the future, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? Remember, it's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Actually, a young woman took Dr. Laura to task by writing an email and publishing it on the Internet some years back. Her name was Christina Erickson, and it's a pretty funny story. It's pretty humorous. The questions that are being asked are, in fact, pretty humorous. Actually, most preachers, if you ask those preachers the same 14 questions that she asked of Dr. Laura, I'll bet you that there isn't one preacher in 1,000 who could answer all 14. And if we went the step further and said, well, how many preachers could answer all 14 questions out of the scripture and cite the statutes and the history or the law that concerns those statutes, I'll bet you'd be fewer than that. It isn't that there aren't any. There's quite a few guys out there that I know of that can answer these 14 questions. But I don't hear anybody doing that. I hear people asking these questions and making fun of God or making fun of the Bible. But I don't hear anybody intelligently taking that question, like the last time we took the two questions of sodomy and sacrifices, and just answered them right out of the scripture. What's wrong with that? Remember, a guy that hangs a piece of real estate in the sky, like the earth, and then puts a satellite in orbit around it, like our moon, and then starts a fire to keep it warm, like our sun, is a pretty talented, a pretty powerful guy. Not exactly the kind of guy that you'd want to give the finger to, you know. It just seems like to me. Seems like that's pretty serious stuff, and it seems like to me that if he gives us some instructions, it's kind of like getting your new Ford car, and you get this instruction booklet in the jockey box that says, when you change the oil, replace the oil with SAE 30 weight, you know. People are pretty careful about following the instructions on how to service their automobile. They're not very careful about how to service their bodies. And we have a lot of disease as a result of that. We have better running cars than we have better running bodies. Did you know that? We spend $1.6 trillion a year trying to cure the diseases that we inflict upon ourselves because we won't follow the 18 health laws of the Bible. That doesn't strike me as being real smart. So I thought I'd take a look at these 14 questions that Christina Erickson wrote. She wanted to be funny. I think I'll just try to be real serious. Now, last time we were talking about this thing of sacrifices, and I mentioned to you that these sacrifices are made at your local courthouse. Have you ever stopped to think about the policeman? What's his role? If we compared the policeman, crime, jail, courthouses, judges, if we compared that with ancient times and ancient law, how did Moses deal with criminals? And where were the policemen back in Moses' time? What did you call the policeman back in Moses' day? What did you call a judge or the courthouse back 3,300 years ago? Is there any correlation between the two? Well, there's a thing called the Levitical priesthood. You probably heard about that. There's a book in the Bible called the Book of Leviticus. It's actually a law book, but in that law book, it has a lot of instruction concerning a group of people called Levitical priests. Now, today, there's a great hue and cry all over the Christian world. I can't speak for the rest of you people out there in the world, you know, you Buddhists and Muslims, etc. But here in the Christian world, a great hue and cry over women preaching in church. Women here in America, they want to preach. They want to get into the clergy. They want to become ministers. God is a male chauvinist pig. Did you know that? That's the common vernacular of our God. You know, our God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you know, he had some jobs that he ascribed particularly to women and prohibits men from getting involved, you know, kind of like childbirth. And then he's got other jobs over here that he has prescribed particularly for men and left women out altogether, like the priesthood. And so we take a look at that here, and we say, well, God made a mistake, so we got to fix that. And so we here in the Western world, we're real busy fixing our God's mistakes. See, you Muslims don't have that problem. Your God, Allah, he doesn't make mistakes like our God makes mistakes, and so we got to be busy fixing our God's mistakes all the time. That's why we have politicians making laws for us in Washington. We need Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein to fix God's mistakes. Now, this thing of the priesthood was set out specifically for one group of people among our family members. See, we come from a big extended family. Our great patriarch, Jacob, had 12 boys. He had one daughter and 12 boys. And so I've got 11 uncles. And each one of those families developed into a nation. And so today, you know, I look at my uncle Benjamin, you know, and he's in Norway. And then I got my uncle Naphtali, and he's in Sweden. So, and then there's all of these various and sundry uncles over here. Uncle Reuben is in France. And Uncle Dan is in Denmark and Ireland. It's split up there, and they got two countries. Those Danites, you know, they're not dummies. They got two pieces of real estate. And so the bottom line is that I've got this big extended family. And in our family, we had one tribe called the Levites. Uncle Levi, he got the civil service job. He got the cushy job, the government job. He gets to fill in the potholes, build the bridges, run the city council and the police department. Uncle Levi runs the police department. He's the chief of police. And in our family, you don't get voted in or voted out. God ordains that certain people do certain things. And see, he ordained Levi to run the civil service. And that's just the way it is. I mean, women in church makes a lot of sense, and it's good religion. But it doesn't make any scriptural sense, and it's bad law. It's bad law because it's strictly prohibited. I mean, that's just where it's at. Now, it reminds me of the King of England. And I aspired to be the King of England. You know, here's little Georgie Gordon, you know, aspiring to be the King of England. And then I learned how that King of England thing worked. And first of all, you got to be born into the Windsor family. And it gets trickier than that. You not only have to be born into the Windsor family, you got to be a male born into the Windsor family to be a king. You girls can be a queen, but you can't be a king. That's another part of the problem that we have. And then I found out that Gordons can't become the King of England, and that it's a discriminatory policy created by God way, way, way back in ancient times when he was forming these kings and kingdoms over here, and he just aced me out altogether. So little Georgie Gordon cannot become the King of England. As a matter of fact, I can't become the king of anything. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. And I've gone through life with that burden on my shoulders, you know, hanging out. I've been despondent over it. Not being the King of England has been a debilitating force in my life from the time I was a child. All right, but recently I got over it. Recently I woke up to the fact that I can never become King of England. And now my life is getting on, and I'm happier, and I'm doing other things. And if women could understand that they can never be priests, and they can never offer sacrifices in the temple, you know, they, you know, just get on with life, ladies, and you'll be a lot happier for it. But unfortunately, here in the Western world, we have to have our women, you know, they have to serve as preachers. Now, it comes from this thing called the Levitical priesthood of Tennessee. I'll tell you a little story here. I happened to be in Tennessee some years back. I was doing a series of lectures. I was invited to a seminar, a convention. Actually, it was a convention. And I was speaking there at this convention, and one day at the convention site, I was in the restaurant having breakfast. And this guy came up, happened to be a preacher, and he came up and he asked me if he could sit there and talk to me. And so while I was eating my breakfast, he sat there and he started asking me some questions, kind of like Christina Erickson. And he asked me if I practiced the law of Moses, and I said, yeah, I do. And then he couldn't contain himself, and so like Christina here, he asked me the question. He said, well, Well, if you practice the law of Moses, do you practice the sacrifices? Do you practice the sacrifices? Remember Christina, last time she asked, if she was to do this sacrifice in her backyard and her neighbors complained about it, should she smite them? You know, she's trying to be cutesy. And this preacher over here, I kind of suspect he was getting a little on the cutesy side too. But I thought, well, you know, if you give this dog enough rope, he ought to hang himself. So I didn't answer the guy's, you know, and tell him yes or no. And I answered his question with a question, and I said, well, tell me, sir, here in Tennessee, don't you practice the Levitical priesthood and the sacrificial system here? And the guy looked at me like he had been kicked in the crotch. I mean, he looked at me like, oh, my God, I can't believe you're asking that. And he denied it. He said, no, we're Christians here. We don't practice the sacrifices here. I guess he must have thought that I was burning bulls on the altar out in Idaho, where I'm from. I mean, I get up in the morning and kill a bull and gut him out and cut him up nicely and build a big fire on a rock pile and burn him every morning for breakfast. Evidently, must have been what was going through his mind over here, because kind of like Christina here, he was asking me kind of in a serious tone, well, do you practice the sacrifices? And what he's really angling for is this. If I answer his question yes, he's going to say, don't you know that the sacrifices have been abolished by the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross? Which isn't true and doesn't have any merit whatsoever as a matter of law. But then that's what Christians believe and that's what they practice. And I'm not opposed to it. I'm just sitting here telling you that ain't the case. Jesus died on the cross and Jesus died for our sins, but it didn't abolish the Levitical priesthood as exemplified by the fact that the priesthood continued on long after Jesus was dead and buried and resurrected and gone to heaven, for crying out loud. It continued on. And then if I answered his question no, then he'd say, well, ha, 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 how can you claim to be practicing the law of Moses if you don't practice the sacrifices? So there, smarty pants. You know, it's one of these heads you win and tails I lose. You know, it's a no-brainer, it's a no-winner, so why even engage in the conversation? But if you'll remember last time I told you, I said, you know, you got to answer a fool according to his folly. Not always, because there's another proverb that says, answer not a fool according to his folly. You know, sometimes you need to answer a fool and sometimes you ought not to. You know, you need a little discernment here. So this was one of those times when it looked like, geez, I guess I need to answer this fool, kind of like Christina here. So when I asked him if he practiced the Levitical priesthood, he denied it. And I said, well, excuse me, sir, but as I was driving in today, driving in to the convention center, I observed somebody in a car up on the on-ramp to the freeway. And he was pointing a thing at me. Can you tell me what that was? And he said, well, that was a highway patrolman. And he was pointing the radar detector at you to see if you were speeding. So I asked this preacher, I said, well, so what? So what if I was speeding? What difference does it make? And he said, well, speeding is against the law. And I said, against the law? What if I was speeding and I was breaking the law? What was this policeman going to do? He said, well, he would come out and give you a ticket. And I said, well, let me see if I understand this. I'm a stranger from a far, far land called Idaho. And being new and a novice here in this wondrous land of Tennessee, what does that mean? The policeman is going to give me a ticket for speeding. And he said, well, speeding is against the law. And he'd come out and he would give you a ticket and you'd have to go in and pay a fine. Huh. Can you believe that? Now, you talk about strange and foreign customs. I was even asking myself the question. I asked this preacher, I said, well, what is the speeding thing? He says, driving too fast. And I said, well, what difference does it make? You know, one guy drives 50, one guy drives 75, the next guy drives 110. So what? In Germany, they got autobahns over there with no speed limits on them. So what? One guy drives 50, one guy drives 75, next guy. Oh, but here in Tennessee, you know, we have a speed limit. Oh, why? Why do you have a speed limit? What's the purpose? You ever stop and ask yourself, you know, what's the purpose of having these laws and rules and regulations to start with? What's the purpose of having a law that says thou shalt not commit adultery, or thou shalt not steal, or thou shalt do no murder? What's behind all that? I'm sure that some guy from the Casa Nostra says, well, what's wrong with murder? That's the way I make my living. You know, this guy did something, I didn't like it, so I went out and I snuffed him. We take offense at that here in the United States, and our attorney general takes offense at it, and our police take offense at it, and the judges take offense at it, and they want to punish these guys. We build big prisons, and we put these people in prison. Some of them we even execute. We kill them for murder, for doing that which the mafia guy does to make his living. So, you know, if you stop and think about it for a minute, laws are made for conduct, aren't they? We give you a traffic ticket because we want to alter your conduct. God wants to alter your conduct, so he comes up with the sacrifice. And I would contend, I told you this last time, I would contend that if you had to go out and take a sheep and bring that sheep in to the judge at the courthouse, cut its throat, bleed it, skin it, gut it, cut it up into parts, so that the priest could burn that on the altar. First of all, it costs you $200. Second, it takes you about 2 hours of your time, maybe even all day, to go round this critter up, load him in your pickup, haul him into town, haul him out, kill him, bleed him, gut him, skin him, butcher him, and give him to the priest. It's bloody, it's gory, it's dirty, it's sweaty, it's smelly. And I'll bet you that instead of fining you $200, if I made you go through that sacrifice, you'd quit speeding a hell of a lot faster than you would over a $200 fine. Now, I'm just guessing over here, but I've killed a few sheep, and if I had the choice between the sheep route and the $200 fine route, I'd take the $200 each and every time. So I asked this preacher, now I said, well, don't you practice the Levitical priesthood here in Tennessee? He denied it. He said, I'm a Christian. Get that? So evidently, you Christians don't practice this Levitical priesthood, which then makes me wonder, excuse me, Christian, but why do you carry the Bible around under your arm if you don't practice what the Bible teaches? Seems like to me that you ought to be practicing this Levitical priesthood. Seems like, doesn't it? Oh, that's right. The Old Testament's abolished and done away with. Oh, okay. I've heard that argument. I'm not sure it's got any merit. But this policeman today, in ancient times, he was called the high priest servant. And do you remember that Peter, you know, in the Garden of Gethsemane? Do you remember this story in Sunday school? And when the high priest servant came out to take Jesus, Peter cut off the high priest servant's ear. Today we would call that assaulting an officer in the performance of his duty. Do you know that? And the thing that saved Peter's bacon was that Jesus took his ear, which is severed, laying on the ground, picked it up, and stuck it back on this guy's ear, or on his head, so stuck his ear back on his head, and healed him right there on the spot, which destroyed the state's prima facie case that Peter had assaulted an officer by cutting off his ear. Because, you know, if they brought the officer in, well, where is your ear? Well, it's here on my head. Well, I thought you said that this guy cut it off. Well, he did. Well, then what happened? Well, this other guy picked it up off the ground and stuck it back on my head and made me whole again. Now, who in the hell is going to believe that story? All right, so that saved Peter's bacon. But for the point of my story here, the policeman was the high priest's servant. And what do we call crime today? You know, the speeding down the road, we call that crime. Well, in ancient times, they called that sin. Sin is an old King James word for iniquity or transgression or violation or crime. That's what a sin is. Sin is the transgression of the law. In 1 John 3, verse 4, the Bible tells you, sin is. You want to know what it is? Here it is. Sin is the transgression of the law. You want to know what crime is? Crime is the transgression of the law. That's simple enough, isn't it? Now, when the high priest servant catches you sinning, or when the policeman catches you committing a crime, he takes you to jail. Today, the policeman puts you in jail, but in the Bible, they call that being put in ward, W-A-R-D. They put him in ward. They put him in a restraint. They put him in the dungeon. They put him in where he couldn't get out. They locked him up. Whether you call it prison or being put in ward or call it jail or restraint, that's what it is. In ancient times, we called this being put in ward. Well, then after they put you in ward, where did they take you? Well, today, the policeman comes into the jail, and then he takes you over to the courthouse. In ancient times, they took you to the temple. You see, the temple is the seat of government business. Today, we don't call these temples, we call them courthouses, but they're built just like temples. Go over and take a look at the temples in Greece and Rome. And then come back and take a look and compare the architecture with the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., or with your courthouse down in the town square. Got the same architecture. And in fact, you got the same public business going on in those institutions. It's where they make your law. It's where they enforce your law. It's where you worship your God. Now, God is a sovereign, and a sovereign is a lawmaker. And the capital, the seat of your government, the place where the Senate and House of Representatives, these holy places, meet to create your law that you people worship or obey those laws and worship your God, the United States of America. That's what that's all about. Now, inside this courthouse, there is a room called the courtroom. And inside the temple, there was a room called the holy place. Holy place. It's where you conduct judicial business. Of course, we don't call it holy place today. We just call it the courtroom. And in the courtroom, there's a guy in there today called the judge. Well, in ancient times, in the holy place, we had a high priest. And this high priest was dressed in this long robe, just like the priest today is dressed in this long robe. And this priest today sits at the bench. That's where he does his business, in the courtroom. Judges do their business in their long robes in a place in the courtroom called the bench. You see, this courtroom is a specific place, like the holy place, and it's got furniture in there. It's got a fence across the middle. It's got seats in the back. It's got seats in the front. It's got a high place called the altar. Well, in ancient times, this high priest did his business at the altar. He took your ram of the first year, and he burned it on the altar. Today, the judge sits at the bench and fines you $200. Now, in this room that we call that, you know, that we call the courtroom, there's a fence that goes across. And if you'll go into church, just go into any church, and you'll see that there's a fence that separates the parishioners, the worshipers, from the object of their worship, which is the priest at the altar. If you want to test how holy this is, just walk into any court anywhere in America and sit on that fence and see what the judge tells you. See what the judge tells you. That's called the bar. Well, in the temple, this was called the veil. The veil, the separation between the parishioners and the priest. It's called the veil. Today we call it the bar. Now, if you want to cross that veil, if you want to go behind the veil, if you want, we call it in law, we call it piercing the corporate veil. Piercing the corporate veil. We use these terms today. Anyway, you've got to have a lawyer. If you want to cross the bar, you've got to have a lawyer. And in ancient times, you had to have an intercessor. That's why Jesus is called your intercessor between you and God. You have to have a lawyer to go up to God, the judge, in the courthouse, so that you can pray, so that you can enter your prayer for relief. In paragraph 20 of a civil action, we call this a prayer for relief. If you're in a criminal case, we call this a plea. And so you walk in to make your plea. And then when you finish making your plea, you'll be found either not guilty or guilty. And assuming that you're found guilty, you're guilty of crime. Well, in ancient times, you were guilty of sin. So throughout the Bible, God says you're guilty of sin, and today the judge says you're guilty of this crime of speeding. This makes you a criminal. Today, you're called a criminal. In ancient times, you're called a sinner. So in biblical terms, you're called a sinner, and today you're called a criminal. And then we have to pay a fine. Fine. Well, in ancient times, we made an offering called a sin offering. The sin offering was equal to the fine. But you can't make a sin offering without having a heave offering. And today, you can't make a fine without paying court costs. Just try it. Go into court and tell the judge, I'll pay you the fine, but no court costs. No. You got that backwards. The judge can forgive you the fine, but never forgive you the court costs. Everybody pays the court costs, even if you're innocent. Court costs. The opposite to that's called a heave offering. Now, if you don't like this process, you can appeal to your Supreme Court. And in ancient times, you used to appeal to the Holy of Holies. In Numbers chapter 36 is an example of a judgment that comes from God out of the Holy of Holies. And in ancient times, this was called the Levitical priesthood. But today, we call it the civil service. It's the judicial system. Civil service. And you tell me that you Christians out there, you tell me that you don't practice the Levitical priesthood today? In your state, listen, you people not only practice the Levitical priesthood of Tennessee, you practice the Levitical priesthood of California, Washington, Oregon, New York, Florida, and North Dakota, because all of those states practice the same practice. And furthermore, this is a part and parcel of this old biblical process that has been adopted by every country in the world. And you call yourselves modern and up to date? Sounds pretty religious to me. And on that note, we've got to give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our website at georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Well, there's the story of the Levitical priesthood in Tennessee. Now, getting back here to our humorist, Christina Erickson. Our humorist is identified as Christina Erickson of Croftsbury Common, Vermont, and her next inquiry of Dr. Laura was, I would like to sell my daughter into slavery as sanctioned in Exodus 21, verse 7. In this day and age, what do you think would be a good price for her? Exodus 21, verse 7 is only part of the story. Christina, let's read the whole law. I mean, let's get real wild and crazy, and instead of just citing the one verse, Exodus 21, 7, let's take a look at Exodus 21, verses 7 through 11, and see, what is this law all about? It starts off by saying, if a man sells his daughter to be a maidservant, she shall not go out as the men servants do. If she pleases not her master, who has betrothed her to himself, then shall he let her be redeemed. To sell her unto a strange nation, he shall have no power, seeing he has dealt deceitfully with her. And if he hath betrothed her unto his son, he shall deal with her after the manner of daughters. If he take him another wife, her food, her raiment, and her duty of marriage shall he not diminish. And if he do not these three unto her, then shall she go out free without money. All right? Now, Christina asks the question, she says, in this day and age, what do you think would be a good price for her? I want to sell my daughter into slavery as sanctioned in Exodus 21:7. Did you get that? I want to sell my daughter into slavery. Well, let's just think about this for a moment. Please note that the word slave or slavery does not even appear in this statute. In Exodus 21, verses 7 through 11, the word slave or slavery doesn't even appear. Now, that should be a clue. You know, even to a kid in college, I mean a real smart kid in college, that should be a clue that the subject matter here isn't slavery. But by reading the context of the story, we see the word betrothed in there twice. Now, betrothed, what does betrothal mean? Isn't that a promise for marriage? A promise for marriage. And there's something in here to do with money. If she please not her master, who has betrothed her to himself, then shall he let her be redeemed. To sell her unto a strange nation, he shall have no power, seeing he has dealt deceitfully with her. And if he has betrothed her unto his son, that's the second time he's used the word betrothed, he shall deal with her after the manner of daughters. And if he takes him another wife, oh my God, another wife, mean two wives? Sounds like polygamy to me. And her duty of marriage shall he not diminish. Duty of marriage. There's something to do with marriage, and there's something to do with money here. There's something to do with a maidservant, a master, and a son. Hey, kids, doesn't sound like any slavery here to me. This sounds like the bride price for a woman being betrothed in marriage. Bride price. Bride price. Now, for you Christians out there, now that's a foreign and alien term, because Christians don't practice bride price. Christians do not practice the laws of God or the laws of the Bible. They're religious people. They practice religion, not law. And that's why, as this young woman, Christina Erickson, probably is having a problem, she went to church. I just bet you that's the beginning of her trouble. She went to church, and now she doesn't understand even what she plainly reads. Complicate that with college. I mean, this girl's had a public school education. She's been to Sunday school and church, and now they put her into college. Can you understand why this woman is a total space case? I mean, a total space case. The word slave and slavery doesn't appear in here, and there's a couple of words that are probably incorrect. Maidservant would probably better be translated betrothed woman or engaged girl or something like that. Sell his daughter into marriage. Marriage might be a better word. I'm not here to criticize the old King James translators. I mean, they used the word maidservant, which probably had the same connotation, but today we're talking about a betrothal. Let me tell you a little story here. There was a guy down in Indonesia, and they practiced bride price over there, and so he went up to this guy's, or this woman's father went up to this guy, and he said, I would like to marry your daughter. The guy said, well, yes, great, great, but there's a bride price. And the guy said, yes, yeah. And the guy said, well, I want two cows for my daughter. The bride price was two cows. Well, the guy said, no, I don't think two cows is the correct price. Now, you know, you can haggle over, you know, is your daughter worth two cows or 16 sheep or one cow and five sheep or something like that. But this guy said, no, I think that girl's worth seven cows. Now, it was common in the community to pay two cows, and if she was an Elizabeth Taylor girl, maybe three cows. Maybe if she was really outstanding, you might even pay four cows, but to pay seven cows for this girl, who wasn't really an Elizabeth Taylor. I mean, we were talking about, you know, some really knockout, good-looking woman over here. She's just an average Jane six-pack, you know. She was, you know, probably young and probably nice-looking, but not beautiful, not a real special case. And so her daddy was really, really happy with the idea that he was going to get paid seven cows for this one daughter. And so he went ahead and paid the seven cows, went through the marriage, and they went out and did their thing. Now, in the society, women are measured by the bride price. Their value in the community, their status in society is measured by their bride price. Now, of course, we have a society here. We have a Washington society and a New York society. We have a society page. And of course, you know, if you want to be in the upper crust of society, you know, if you want to be in Hollywood society, you know, you have to do certain things in order to get in there. And it deals with money. I mean, if you want to go to a cocktail party with Henry Kissinger, you're going to have a little more money, a little more prestige, a little more something going for you than truck driver or a company electrician. Not that truck drivers are bad guys or electricians, you know, are low outcasts in society. It's just that, you know, to get in with Henry and Ted Kennedy and George Bush, you got to be in society. Well, in this society, you had to, you know, your value as a woman was measured by your bride price. This woman had the highest bride price ever paid in their village, 7 cows. So when she went down to the river to wash clothes, everybody else got out of her way and she went right to the head of the line to wash her clothes in the river. And conversely, whenever she was doing anything in her society, she was measured and her status in the community was measured. She was number one because of the bride price that her husband paid for her. Do you know that for thousands of years in societies around the world, including Israelite society, Arab society, Muslim society, people have been paying bride prices? They do it in India to this day, bride price. Now, of course, we Americans, we're modern and chic and up to date, and my God, we don't do that anymore. So, ladies, if you want to know what your value is, what do you think your husband values you at? If you ask the question, how much did he pay for you? And that's exactly what you're worth. Just ask yourself, what did your husband pay for you, ladies? And that'll tell you what you're worth. Now, we had an old patriarch by the name of Jacob. And old Jake saw this young girl named Rachel, and he liked her, and he wanted to marry her. And so he went, instead of laying her in the back of his Chevy van first, he went to her father, Laban, and said, I've got an eye for your daughter over here, and I'd like to marry her. And Laban said, wonderful. I can't think of a better guy as a son-in-law than you, Jake. Now let's talk about the bride price. And Jacob was a little indisposed and didn't have a whole lot of money. He didn't have a lot of ready cash. He didn't have his Visa gold card that he could just you know, run this through the machine over there and marry this girl, you know, pay the bride price and marry this girl. And so they worked out a barter arrangement. He agreed to work for 7 years for this girl. 7 years. Now listen, Charlie, you're an electrician, and you're getting paid $43,000 a year as an electrician, a truck driver or something else, right? That's the median average wage. Half the people in America make over $43,000. Half the people in America make under that. So median wage is $43,000, $21.50 an hour. You got that? $21.50 an hour. Okay, so you're an electrician, you're a plumber, you're a carpenter, and you're making $21.50 an hour. How much money would you pay for a woman if you had to work for her for 7 years? All right, let's just take 8 hours a day times 5 days a week, 40 hours a week times 50 weeks in a year. Hell, we'll give you 2 weeks off for vacation. That's 2,000 hours a year times $21.50, $43,000 a year times 7 years. That's $301,000. Boys, if you paid $300,000 for your wife, would you treat her better than you do today? I think you would. Boys and girls, I'm a cattle breeder, and I'm going to tell you that if I paid $300,000 for a prize choice A number one Jersey bull to breed my cows, do you think that bull would spend a day out in the rain? Do you think I might have a barn for him? You know, they have racehorses over here in Kentucky. You ever take a look at the nice, neat green pastures and white painted fences and the stalls and the barns that they keep those horses in? Those horses are worth $300,000. How many of you horse breeders in Kentucky ever paid $300,000 for a wife? Well, that's what Jake paid. And listen, if he was making $5.15 an hour times 2,000 hours, that's $10,300 a year times 7 is $72,100. Boys and girls, how many of you women had a husband that paid $72,000? Hell, that's minimum wage. So I just wanted to remind you that the bride price was well established in the Bible in ancient times. And we Anglo-Saxon have been practicing the bride price. And here's a statute right here in Exodus 21:7-11. It has nothing to do with slavery. It has nothing to do with selling your daughter. It has to do with selling your daughter for the bride price. Now, question arises. Who gets the money for the bride price? Well, a righteous man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. Children's children. That's his grandchildren. A righteous man. Now, that means that when the daughter leaves home, she takes with her her dowry. You ever heard that word dowry? Dowry. That's the woman's inheritance. Where does the father get the woman's inheritance for all of these girls? I mean, what if you had 12 girls instead of 12 boys? And you've got to provide a dowry for each one of them. where do you think the father gets the money to give to the girl for her inheritance so that she can buy and sell land and hire maidens and support her husband to the standard of living that he wishes to become accustomed, as we see in Proverbs chapter 31? Where do you think that money comes from, kids? Well, let me tell you. It comes from the bridegroom or from the father of the bridegroom, which you saw right here in Exodus 21, verses 7 through 11. Now, I had a daughter, young woman, good-looking young woman. Now, she had been married at age 18, and by the time she was 21 or 22, she had one child. She's no longer a virgin, but she married a doctor. Now, that girl married well. That's what my granny used to call being, you know, for young women. She married well. Okay, and that's what Exodus 21, verses 7 through 11 is talking about. She married well. And in that marriage, we arrived at a price with Dr. Reading, and here's what it was. I sold my daughter to Dr. Charles Reading in a patriarchal Hebrew marriage on April the 7th, 1989, and here was the bride price. It was one covered horse trailer, 1 6-year-old Arabian gelding, 1 2-year-old registered quarter horse stud, 4 registered quarter horse mares, 16 2/3 pounds of 3/9 fine silver, 1 pound of 4/9 fine gold, and 1 8-and Ford tractor with implements. The total value in dollars for you Americans in 1989 dollars was about $32,000. I then gave this bride price, that is the horses, the tractor, the gold, and the silver, to my daughter as her dowry. And when she left here with $32,000 worth of goods in gold, silver, tractors, horses, horse trailer, hardware. And that belongs to her, and it is not community property because we Hebrews don't practice communism. We don't practice community property. We practice strict property rights. And that's why if this money had been paid for her, and if she pleases not her master who has betrothed her to himself, then shall he let her be redeemed. That is, the money that was paid for her is given back to him. That's all. If he decides that he doesn't want to marry her for some reason, then she's to be redeemed. She goes to her daddy and says, hey, this klutz doesn't want to marry me now. And so daddy says, okay, well, here's your money back, sucker. He shall not sell her to a strange nation. He cannot take the value of this girl who is unwed, unmarried, but betrothed to him, and sell her to somebody else. He cannot make merchandise of her. And she shall go out, last verse, and if he do not these three unto her, then shall she go out free without money. If he doesn't do these three things, then she keeps the money, or her daddy keeps the money, and she goes out free for nothing. Christina, this doesn't have anything to do with slavery. It doesn't even have anything to do with bond servitude. Please note that the word slave doesn't appear in the statute, nor do we see bond servant either, so this statute isn't even addressing slaves or bond servants. In verse 8, we see the subject matter of the statute in the word betrothed. This is a marriage statute. The word sell in verse 7 tells us there's a price or a value placed upon the female who is betrothed to her master or to her husband-to-be, her fiancé. This is a Hebrew law written by Moses. Christians don't understand Hebrew law, and that's because Christians don't practice these laws. They're foreign. They're alien to Christians. But we Hebrews place a value upon our females. You see, Christina, a Hebrew virgin female is very, very valuable. And this is called the bride price. The groom pays the father of the bride a bride price for his property, which is his daughter. Now, he usually adds this bride price to her dowry, which is a female's inheritance under the scriptural inheritance law. You see, we Hebrews give our women folks an inheritance. Christians don't do that, but we Hebrews do. Every female, as she marries, receives her dowry or her inheritance when she leaves her father's house and moves into her new husband's house. And this dowry is her personal, private property to be used and invested as she sees fit. This doesn't belong to her father. This doesn't belong to her husband. It belongs to the female. And in Hebrew law, we Hebrews practice strict property rights. You'll see that in Proverbs chapter 31. Hebrews don't practice community property. The value of this female is negotiable between the father of the bride and the bridegroom and or the groom's father. Now, if the daughter be fair, you know, like Elizabeth Taylor, she can be worth a whole lot more than a Roseanne Barr. If a daughter is not so desirable, a father may have to pay the bridegroom to take her away, which is not the bride price, but is the dowry. Again, that's a marketplace decision. As I said, I sold my daughter to Dr. Charles Reading in a patriarchal Hebrew marriage for about $30,000. Then I gave the goods delivered to me to my daughter. The bride was 20 years old, divorced with one child. Had she been a virgin, she would have brought double or even triple that price. Double or triple. Now, I added her bride price to her dowry, and I gave it to her at her wedding for a wedding present. My daughter is a very wealthy young woman in her own right. My daughter married well. And we think that this statute from the Mosaic Law is a real benefit to women. A real benefit to women. And then especially a real benefit to my daughter. Now, I've got another daughter, and I'm going to, this daughter's a little different than that one. This daughter is a virgin. She's an 18-year-old virgin, good-looking, well-traveled. She's been to every state in the union save for Hawaii and Alaska. She's trained in business, homemaking, cattle raising, sheep. She's trained in the law, practices the law. She's educated at the foot of her mother, and the bride price is 300 ounces of gold or $15,000 in U.S. gold coin. And the question arises, who gets the $15,000 in U.S. gold coin upon her marriage on her wedding day? And the answer is that the bride price is given to her as her dowry. It's her inheritance. See how simple that is? And the man that marries her after he's paid $15,000 in U.S. gold coin, I'll bet you he'll treat her a hell of a lot better than a lot lizard in the cab of your truck, Junior. I'll bet he'll treat that girl a lot better than any bull or any horse he buys. I'll bet you Jacob treated his two wives, Leah and Rachel, a hell of a lot better than he treated his cattle, which is a hell of a lot more than you can say for most men treating their wives today. Not to say that not every man and a woman or every man in America treats his women, you know, like cattle, but I'm just telling you, there's a reason for that law, Christina, and the reason for that law has to do with economics and marriage, has nothing to do with slavery or bond servitude. Nothing. My daughter is going to be one of those, or this last daughter, now this is the last one of the batch, is going to be one of those seven cow brides. A 300-ounce woman. All right, I'm out of time. We'll leave it right there. We'll take up another topic when we come back next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, another topic on the Dr. Laura story. Let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information, please go to the Law Hour website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course, until then. Thanks for listening, and good night, friends.